Welcome back to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth, John Vecchione, and Janine Yunus with you. And we have a victory to report, which is always fun. This is an amicus victory in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in a case called In Re Bistolic Antitrust Litigation. But don't go away yet, because the case is slightly more interesting than it sounds. The issue here, guys, is that there has been developing over the last decade plus a regime in which there's this sort of dance that Congress has blessed between the generic pharmaceutical companies and the brand name pharmaceutical companies. And the problem is that the brand name pharmaceutical companies have a patent on the pharmaceutical that gives them a monopoly. And then when you have a monopoly, you typically can charge monopoly prices for these things. The generics, because the dollar amounts involved here can be astronomical, the generics have an incentive to claim that there's a problem with the patent on the medicine, and so that they could then enter the market and say, well, you know, your patent isn't valid, therefore we can compete against it. And this was happening a lot, and there was a lot of Sturm und Drang and money being spent in these
and
cases.
And I'll just add, it's unclear when the patent runs sometimes, because the patent is given out for a certain reason, but doctors prescribe it for another reason. So when it runs out for this reason, it is not a date certain that the patent runs out.
Gotcha. And so one of the things that has started happening to settle these, and some of the patents, the validity of the patent is a little bit uncertain, right?
It's not
guaranteed, certainly not 100%. So if you have a patent that, say, is that you're 80% confident is valid and you're going to get sued by a generic, well, if there are millions and millions of dollars at stake, you may not think 80% is certain enough that you want to go, you know, the way to the mat.
Or billions. This,
or billions of dollars, absolutely. And if it's, you know, maybe it's 50% certain, then you really don't want to go to the mat on whether or not you're going to be able to uphold this patent in court. And so to avoid that, what has happened, and again, Congress has blessed this dance, is that rather than actually have to violate the patent and go into the market, generic manufacturers are able to sort of announce that that's what they're going to do and start this process of negotiation between the patent holder and the generic would-be generic competitors. And to settle these cases, the pharmaceutical companies have been allowed to make payments to the generics. And a lot of times these payments come with an agreement that the generic can enter the manufacturing maybe 6 months sooner than they would be able to under when the pharmaceutical company thinks the patent would otherwise expire. So you have maybe it's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever. It seems like a lot of these are 6 months that the generic gets to enter early.
Yeah, they agree when the generics can enter without suit.
Right, right. So that obviously has financial value for the generic. And this particular Bistolic is, I believe, a blood pressure medication that Forest Labs, now part of AbbVie, makes. And it was sued by several generic competitors in the Southern District of New York. And District Judge Lewis Lyman had dismissed that suit twice, first without prejudice, then with prejudice. And this past week, the Second Circuit affirmed the district court's dismissal, finding that the appellants had failed to show that Forest's settlement payments to generic drug manufacturers were, quote unquote, large and unjustified under the Supreme Court's FTC v. Actavis precedent.
And what was the administrative law portion of this?
Well, you know, I think that I don't know that there's strictly speaking an administrative law portion.
I think there is, because the FTC took this position. They dislike these things.
Well, the FTC definitely filed an amicus brief in this case, although it was really on the antitrust side of what they do, as opposed to, like, for example, some of the consumer protection rulemaking side of what they do. But they certainly, FTC certainly took the view that this was a large and unjustified payment. What they didn't really account for was that there was value received in exchange for the large payment. And one of the things that NCLA focused on, both at the district court, where Judge Lyman quoted our amicus brief, or at least cited to it, and the Second Circuit looked at this point too, is to say that, you know, what is you can't just look at the size of the payment. You have to look at what was exchanged in value for that payment.
And is this a bona fide agreement or is it collusive? And there's something that I litigated against both these type of companies for 10 years. And what I learned in that, they hate each other.
The generics and the brand names.
If you represent the generics as a law firm, you can't represent the brand names. They like to call themselves the innovator firms. Because that's what they call themselves in their litigation.
Okay.
And so you can't even represent them. They hate each other like poison. So I don't even believe they could collude.
Well, they certainly don't trust each other, right?
Exactly.
Further than they can throw each other. So, you know, so there's that issue. And before I go further, I should note that NCLA's amicus brief in the Second Circuit was done with a co-signer, the International Center for Law and Economics, run by Jeff Manny out in Oregon, and so we appreciated the ability to team up with them on this amicus brief and really point out that Congress has required the courts to maintain a balance between the competing claims of patent law and antitrust law.
How did Congress do that? What was the congressional act?
I don't have the name of the congressional act in front of me, but there was a congressional act that spelled out sort of the time frame and the particular steps that the generic has to take in order to signal that it wants to contest the patentability or the validity of a patent that's held by the brand name manufacturers. And Congress doesn't want to shortchange the rights of the patent holders, but they also don't want to ignore the competitive claims of antitrust law.
And right? Lower drug prices by allowing generics. So, right.
Absolutely.
And that points out, I think, another reason why the FTC was wrong here. And not only do they not look at the facts, not only do they not look at the reality, but the other thing is there is legal risk. All these things were not done deals.
Right.
All of them were either side could have lost, which is exactly when you have an agreement, right?
When you have a settlement, yeah, for sure. When both sides have something to gain, both sides have something to lose. Here, though, this case didn't even survive, you know, the motion to dismiss. And what the Second Circuit said is that plaintiffs' lawyers are permitted to get into court to challenge the legality of a patent litigation settlement. But to do so, they have to bear the burden of demonstrating that a large and unjustified net payment was made for the purpose of restraining trade and that wasn't done here. It's not just enough to show that there was a large and unjustified payment. It has to be a large and unjustified net payment, right? So you have to take into account what the exchange value was here. And so as part of this settlement agreement with seven generic drug manufacturers, Forrest had agreed to permit the generic companies to begin competition several months before the expiration of Forrest's patent on Bistolic. And the generics agreed not to enter the market before that date. Then they also entered into side deals whereby Forrest paid the generic companies in return for providing things like ingredients for the drug's manufacturer. So looking at all of this, the court decided that even though the plaintiffs alleged that Forrest had made these payments for the sole purpose of inducing the generics not to compete, which if it did it solely for that purpose, it would be a violation of antitrust law. The court decided that plaintiffs wanted Forrest to bear the burden of proving that it had paid no more than fair value for the goods and services it received. But the Second Circuit
rather
rejected
than the plaintiff?
That. Exactly. And the Second Circuit rejected that argument. It said, no. To sort of clear the bar, you, the plaintiff, have to show that there's some reason to question the settlement here. I think this was a stunning rebuke of the Federal Trade Commission, even though, you know, what's interesting to me, John, about this case is FTC could have sued directly as an antitrust violation.
Right.
It did not do that.
And maybe on fairness.
You mean it could have sued on fairness
maybe
rather than
both.
On antitrust?
Maybe both. Yeah.
Yeah. But it chose not to do that. But then it jumped in the case with both feet, with an amicus brief suggesting that uncompetitive behavior had occurred here. And so I think it's yet again. I think this is the second time this week that Lina Khan and the FTC's wings have been clipped by a federal court that just doesn't buy the FTC's current version of antitrust law that ignores consumer consumer protection or not consumer welfare.
Do we think there'll be a cert petition?
I don't actually. I mean,
me neither.
Never say never, I suppose. But I think that, look, they didn't even survive the motion to dismiss. I don't think the court thought this was a close question. It was a unanimous decision of the Second Circuit written by Judge Jacobs. I don't think there's much to go on here. The Second Circuit doesn't go en banc hardly ever.
No.
So I don't think that there'll be an en banc. And I don't know what the plaintiffs here would hang their hat on to try to, to get a...
And for the FTC, it's a terrible blow because the Second Circuit is important in this area.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the cases, I can't remember. I think Actavis itself might have come out of the Second Circuit. I can't remember for sure. This area of the law has been developing. I think there's a well understood balance here. I think Congress has blessed that balance. I think the Supreme Court has blessed that balance. I think this unanimous decision of the Second Circuit also blesses that balance. And for the FTC to come in and try to upset that balance, I think was unwise, unnecessary, and not in the best interests of American consumers. And so, look, I think America is a leader in intellectual innovation, as our colleague Peggy Little said when this decision came out, and the rewards of such innovation should not be held hostage to an agency's misuse of its enforcement power under the antitrust laws. So kudos to our former colleague Richard Samp, now retired, who wrote the amicus brief in this case, and to Peggy Little, another nice amicus victory for the New Civil Liberties Alliance.